Lowe's knows when you're looking for reliability, the right brand makes all the difference. And now, Lowe's is the exclusive home improvement retailer for the Whirlpool water treatment line, including their Wi-Fi softener, under-sink filtration system, and more. With Whirlpool's proven performance and our everyday low prices, better tasting, better quality water is within reach. Shop pro-trusted brands like Whirlpool and more, in-store or online. Lowe's. We help, you save.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Hello and a ho ho ho, viewers. Yes, that is how I laugh. Viewers and listeners of the Silver Screen Podcast, and welcome to another new episode kicking off this festive season, I suppose, in a way. I'm going to go around and introduce my two cohorts here first before I get into what we're reviewing and why. So first of all, let me welcome my usual partner in crime, we should say, DK.
Hello.
Hello, the Jesper to my Klaus, or perhaps the other way around, I'm not sure. And we are joined again by a regular face/voice on the podcast. Welcome back, Adrienne.
Hello, everyone. So excited to be here today. Woohoo!
Awesome. It's great to have you here. And again, we'll get into the reasons why you're here in a minute. But yeah, if you are, you know, unaware for bizarre reasons, we are going to be reviewing the Netflix movie Klaus, which I believe came out a few years ago. Myself and DK hadn't seen it until recently, in order to do this review. The reason we're reviewing it is kind of twofold. First of all, I guess most importantly, we put out a poll when we hit 200 subscribers, which now seems like a long time ago, but we basically put out something asking, you know, if you could name a movie that we should review that you really want us to look at. And we didn't get a huge amount of responses, but it turns out that the film that did get the most responses, you know, out of all of those was Klaus. So we kind of scheduled it in around for the correct kind of time of year and decided to look at it. And how many of those people that voted were just Adrienne with a dummy account? We won't say, because along with it winning that poll, we have been, shall we say, badgered gently for about the last year by Adrienne, who insisted that we watch it because it's one of your favorites. It's probably
it
fair to say.
It is. It is. But I mean, just so I want listeners to know, I did say it was okay if we did it in around the holiday season of 2024. I didn't want to really demand it, but, you know, I sort of did want to demand it.
Yeah. And it ended up winning the poll, so it kind of seemed, you know,
right. It seemed right.
I think she's hustling us. She kept us waiting for 20 minutes saying, oh, I couldn't operate, you know, I couldn't get the microphone working. And she's really running an army of sock puppet accounts.
That's why I was on the wrong one. I couldn't figure out which one it was. See, you're not supposed to deceive. And all of my sham Discord accounts and other accounts were just taking over the computer.
So before we head down to Smeerensburg for our review proper, if you are familiar with us, you'll know that we always start with a little behind-the-scenes section, and that falls under the purview of our old DK over there. I don't know why I called you old there. I do apologize, Dick.
Well, you know, old call faithful. It as you see it.
Anyway, without further ado, I'm going to be quiet now before I offend anyone else and pass over to our loyal old faithful DK for the behind-the-scenes section.
Okay, thank you, Mike. As we know, it's a lot harder with animated. There's a lot less can go wrong. So, if anybody's given a cursory glance to IMDb, they'll probably know these anyway. But for those of you who haven't, director Sergio Pablos, he had wanted to do a traditionally animated feature film, but he wanted to see how the animation would have evolved without the switch to computer generated. graphics. So the studio used CGI lighting techniques with hand-drawn animation to create a unique animation style for the story. Now, it was shopped around to various studios who perceived it as too risky. So, yeah. So from April 2015, nobody would touch it until Netflix acquired the rights in November 2017. Pablos found working with Netflix was quite different from other studios. He'd still be given notes on creative choices that they thought he should make, but the difference with Netflix apparently was that these were just suggestions only and not mandatory, Warner Brothers take note. Netflix reported that the film was viewed by nearly 30 million in its first month on the platform. Now, the fictional town of Smeerenberg is apparently based on Smeerenberg, an actual town that existed in Norway and used to be a prosperous whaling post during the 17th century. This is Kendall Joy Hall's debut as a voice actress, and you'll have to forgive me if I mispronounce the name here, but Neda Margrethe Laba, who voiced the Sami girl Margu, did not speak any English. Pablos travelled all the way to Troms, Norway, where she lives, and did her whole recording session through translation and mimicry up there. In addition to Klaus, J.K. Simmons also voices the drill sergeant at the beginning of the film. Ironically, Simmons once worked as a mall Santa while pursuing his acting career. This is Norm MacDonald's final feature film role. And after they crash the sleigh, you can briefly see the A113 on the crate that falls off the back. This is obviously a reference to the classroom used by graphic design and character animation students at the California Institute of the Arts. And as Mike will probably know, it's an Easter egg commonly featured in Pixar movies.
It's actually in a lot of movies. If you ever, especially animated movies, if you ever fancy, you know, having a scout around movies, look for the references to A113, especially in Pixar, but then it's surprising how far it's spread. And if you ever see it and wonder why, that's why it was a classroom where, as you say, animators from Pixar and various places had a classroom in somewhere. Anyway.
And I happen to live like less than 2 miles from CalArts, so it's kind of a common place.
Nice. Yep.
I actually end up there all the time. They always have activities and stuff. It's a great place.
That's cool.
All right. Not envious at all.
Sorry, friends.
It's all right. And well, it leads us into the final one. Finally, it was the first animated film from Netflix to be nominated for an Academy Award. Unfortunately, it lost to Toy Story 4.
Stupid, yeah. Toy Story.
Yeah, I did read that it was one of a bunch of films that Netflix put into theatres for, I think, a week, so that it was eligible for awards nomination, along with the likes of The Irishman and a few others. Yeah, so that's what you may have been lucky enough to catch it at a cinema, but if so, you were a very rare person, I think. Yeah. Shame though, it would have been nice to see, but anyway. Not that I minded watching it on Netflix, but yeah. Yeah, fair enough. So is that everything you've got from the BTS?
That's everything, yeah, mate.
I did do a sort of mini deep dive that's semi-related to this film, so I thought I would do that before we jump into the review. If you know the film, you'll know that this basically revolves around the origin of the whole idea of letters to Santa. So I remembered when I was younger that I'd heard that you could actually write a letter and just write on it Santa North Pole, and the Royal Mail, as it is where we are in the UK, would sort of know what this is, and they had a dedicated place that it would go to, and it would get to the right place, and you know, children would get a reply and whatnot. So I did look into this, and apparently it does still exist, but now it is an actual address that you can send your mail to. Unfortunately, you have to send it by November the 30th to make sure you get a reply from Santa. So there's no point in giving you that, because by the time you listen to this, that will have passed. But fear not, because I went trawling through the internet and I found a place where you can still send a letter to Santa Claus up to December the 10th. So if you hurry, you have a few days to get that sent off. You can send it from anywhere in the world, thankfully, and you have to address your letter, I'll put this on screen and in the description, to Santa Claus, North Pole, capital letters H-O-H space O-H-O, Canada. And drop it in a mailbox and attach a postage stamp, unless you're in Canada, in which case you don't need a postage stamp. And you should apparently get a reply from Santa Claus. So, kids, good luck with that.
And big kids.
And big kids. Yeah. I'll send a link to the website, because on that same site, you can also book Zoom meetings with Santa Claus and emails and all kinds of other things. But this being about traditional snail mail, I thought I better, shout that one particularly out as well. Great. So, as I say, we're going to break into the actual review now, looking the way that we usually do. We kind of break it down for the purposes of our notes into sections like writing, plot, acting, directing, etc. As you'll know, I've said this dozens of times now after so many reviews. But as I said, and as I often say, if the conversation goes a different way and we veer a little bit into a different area, we tend to go with it rather than try and stick rigidly and forget later on or just stunt the conversation in that way. So with that in mind, as I say, normally I would start with, when was the first time you saw this film and what were your impressions? But for the purposes of me and DK, the answer to that is yesterday, and you'll find out. So as we're recording.
Yesterday. You guys are the best. You do care. You care about us. I love it.
Yeah, I would never leave it this late, but it's just been, obviously it's a busy time of year and I've been really busy and everything, and I was just able to sort of sneak it in under the wire, shall
we
say.
Absolutely, I love it.
But yeah, so really we can only ask you, Adrienne. So you watch this when it originally kind of came out? I'm assuming it was on Netflix. You weren't one of the lucky theater goers. And can you remember where you were when you first watched it and what your initial response to it was?
Oh, yep, absolutely. It was December near Christmas because we had our Christmas tree up. And don't laugh, okay? You too, don't laugh at me, but it was cold here. It was cold. So I was cold in Los Angeles. So I was wrapped up in my blanket, just going through Netflix. And I like to watch holiday movies, not the sappy ones, but this one popped up and the animation style was just so interesting, just right there, And so I hit it and I watched it. And I'll never forget one of my kids, I don't remember if it was Ethan or Wes, but they stopped when the beautiful song was playing. And that's when I knew it'd probably become something we all wanted to watch. Yeah, I loved it. Yeah. And I did cry a little, but there was some times when I was, and at the end, the ending was so amazing. So I think I watched it again the next day because it was also Los Angeles cold again. So of course, what else are you going to do? You have to watch Netflix.
Was it out of curiosity, was it well publicized on Netflix? Because I feel like we didn't, I don't know about you, DK, but I feel like I'd never really saw this all that sort of pushed, as it were, on the front page or anything, and I hadn't really heard that much about it until you had insisted we watch it. So
I think I'd seen maybe one image when when you turn Netflix on sometimes and it puts the latest thing. I saw it and then just went to whatever it is. I think it was probably an episode of Star Trek for the hit or miss. And yeah, that's probably the first and last time I saw anything until Adrienne brought it up.
Well, it's funny because do you guys search for like holiday movies in Netflix? Christmas?
Oh, yeah, sometimes I notice that. This year it has like a section where it clicks, you click in and it's like festive holiday.
Yeah, sometimes the wife goes, she looks on there for those
Hallmark ones.
No, I don't watch those ones, but this kept coming up because I intentionally look for it, the holiday stuff, Christmas stuff, that's just my thing. It's one of my things I do this time of year because during the spring I'm never around, so I get to watch TV during the holidays.
That's fair enough. I feel like hopefully we're doing a bit of a service to it and pushing, promoting it a bit better than Netflix did, because I don't think they did enough of a job to publicize it. And I will say,
it's kind of niche, though. Really, it's an animated holiday movie, and really? Netflix has all these other things they have to, really, really push out there for everybody. So, yeah, I understand why it wasn't.
And holiday movies, and especially particularly animated ones, I think do very well, though. It's always a market that, I mean, it wasn't that long ago that Illumination released the new animated The Grinch, and it did really well. Things like that. So I think Netflix could have pushed it more.
They could have, but isn't it also like not a major studio considered, you know, it's kind of made in other countries, and there's, you know, it's, I think it is niche, and that's why I like it so much, or niche. Yeah.
I think things are changing, because I remember everybody raving about the Mitchells versus the Machines and saying you had to see it even if it was a Netflix movie. So I think people are learning that you have to kind of push these things via word of mouth. So again, hopefully that's what we're achieving here. And as I say, you may call this controversial, but I didn't know about the whole awards situation. And I will say right now, off the bat, that this is a better film than Toy Story 4. Sorry if that's controversial. you know, but Toy Story 4 was probably the weakest of the Toy Story quadrilogy, but
it was, but you know,
mind you, I love 1 to 3, especially 3. That's
three
my
is so, I know, 3 is just amazing. It's very high.
About things that make you cry.
I know, yeah. Oh, I know. All right.
So yeah, that out of the way, then we'll jump in, and we'll may as well start by talking about, let's see, the overall kind of writing and the plot. And since, you know, this is your particular baby, shall we say, Adrienne, what are your kind of thoughts about the writing and the plot? What do you like? What particularly stands out that you wanted to bring up on the review today?
I love the way that everything flows without being rushed, how the story goes, really how you get there, and it's gloomy and everything, and the animation is just so incredible. But I love how everything isn't too much base for little kids. I thought that there was enough kind of downtime where you could really see what was happening instead of it all just being rushed and crazy all the time. And I think that's what I love most about it, the pacing. And it didn't have too many songs, another thing I was glad about. And, you know, these lovable, wonderful characters. What are you going to say?
Yeah, definitely. It's weird you say that, because I did say, I wasn't sure if I was critical about it or not, or how I felt about it, but I did sense as well that it started a little bit slowly. It took its time to build up the stakes and, you know, the idea of what Jesper was going for, you know, how many letters he had to do, the idea of when he gets there, this kind of, I suppose, Romeo and Juliet riff of the warring families that are, you know, that are keeping the town looking and feeling terrible and everything. And I was like, looking back, I guess that's necessary, but it did feel a little bit like, particularly because you don't really get the sense that it's a holiday movie or a Christmas movie until about halfway through, if it wasn't for the fact that, you know, that we have that little narrated intro, which I think might have been added because people otherwise watching this might have been like, what's this about? Until we got to, you know, to seeing Klaus and being like, oh, I get it. And then we get into the origin, the sort of how Han Solo got his blaster for Santa Claus situations.
Right.
You well, know, there, where it's,
right. It's,
anyway, no, go ahead.
There was an interview I watched with Sergio Pablos and Carlos Martinez Lopez, where they talked about developing the story. And the first iteration of the story, he was a chimney sweep. He wasn't a postman. And they just felt like they needed to change the beginning of the story because it needed, they decided that he wasn't enough of a developed character. And how is it that, you know, what is the jeopardy for him in this whole thing? So they made him the son of a rich postman, I guess, you know, a rich kind of had a ritzy life. And then he has to go out into the world and challenge himself this way. So that was interesting for me, how they did that. I love the development of stories like that. And I thought that was great. Yeah.
That's strange because, yeah, I mean, the central idea of the film becomes the origin story of Letters to Santa, like I said. And it seems so kind of baked into that being the central idea that I'm surprised to learn that wasn't their starting point in a way, you know, because it works really well. And it's a really clever way of handling that. And I like the way that, like you said, that ties into Jesper's growth as a character and into the story of this town coming out of the tradition of kind of hatred and fighting into more one of kind of joy and giving and the holiday spirit, I guess. So, awesome. Any initial thoughts you wanted to bring up, DK? Anything you wanted to mention?
it kind of puts you on the back foot because you're not expecting it and you can't. You don't know where it's going. It's, as you say, it's not until you actually see Klaus that you know, you start putting two and two together, because up until that, I don't know what you guys thought. I was getting a very big Emperor's New Groove vibe.
That's the animation as well, isn't it?
Really? And yeah, the voices. Yeah, the voices.
It was just like a reincarnation of Kuzco to an extent. But yeah, go on, sorry.
I was going to say, the Joan Cusack, the Mrs. Crumb character, so reminded me of Yzma in the way she was animated and the way Joan Cusack kind of plays her a bit mean as well. And I was like, yeah.
Well, I know it's jumping forward to, you mentioned the style, but when he sat in the carriage with Klaus, it just felt very much like a Kuzco John Goodman situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but, true. Maybe it's an homage. Maybe they loved that movie as a kid.
Maybe. I can't blame him. It's not a bad movie. but I will say I do prefer this one.
Good.
Going back to what you said, I love the start. I love the start. I mean, I'm a huge fan of H.P. Lovecraft, and that going across to the island and the people, it was very much... I was getting Shadow Over Innsmouth vibes. They all look like fish type people and everything. You know, there's fish heads everywhere and it's all dark and grungy. And it did let up. But even when it let up, and I'm no big fan of him, but even when it let up, you did kind of get a Tim Burton-ish vibe from time to time with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do.
And you know, as I say, I'm all right with Tim Burton. I'm not his biggest fan. But I just love the aesthetic on this.
Go ahead, Mike.
No, I did read as well that they specifically had animated Smeerensburg, at least initially, that it was designed to look, you know, menacing and not accommodating and dark. And, you know, I think it's Norm MacDonald's character, the ferryman, who says, oh, the greys really pop. And it's like that was deliberately, as you say, it's evocative of, it's not supposed to be a welcoming place. It's supposed to be like, oh, it's a foreboding, scary place to go, and you face this epic challenge. And as you said, it's an interesting place to start from, particularly for a Christmas movie. And I didn't really get Tim Burton vibes, but certainly of that ilk, you know, the animated, I don't know, is there a hint of the Jan Svankmajer or any of these kind of dark animated or stop motion type movies? Or even, I mean, parts of Disney, they have their moments when things can get dark in like Snow White or Maleficent in Sleeping Beauty and moments like that. And although it doesn't happen a lot, I did also get that sense that I was quite surprised that they have the moment when Jesper initially discovers Klaus's workshop and it's kind of, you know, it looks scary to him. And then you get that kind of doll's head with hollowed out eyes where a bug just randomly crawls out of it. And I was like, oh, this is very, where did this come from? This has suddenly gone very sort of festive horror, I guess, too, but very briefly. I mean, I don't want to give the audience, if they haven't seen it, the impression that's what the film is like, but that particular moment caught me off guard. And I was like, ooh, that's kind of a creepy image.
Yeah.
Well, it's, as usual, DK and I kind of share a brain, because to me, it's very Burton-esque in the scene where he's first coming into the town. And well, of course, the first thing we see through the fog is that whale skeleton, which I just think is incredible. Mm. But there's these four kids, they're crumbs, and they're sticking the one little girl. She turns and she looks, and she's just shoving the carrot nose like into the side of the snowman. And the snowman is not happy. You know, that little girl, she's one of the creepy girls. She's always creepy. She does cheer up, but she's still creepy later. And the animation there, to me, is very Nightmare Before Christmas.
It came, it did come across a bit like Lock, Shock and Barrel.
Absolutely. Just like those kids. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. Because their expressions are just really kind of milquetoast, but they're so spooked. But we learn later that like the kids are fine. It's the grown-ups that are weird.
Yeah.
And angry, of course.
Just like the real world.
Yeah.
I want to argue, but you're not wrong. I touched on it a little bit there, but how do you feel about the idea of, because normally I'm not really one for the kind of very clunky, this is how we introduce everything, you know, like I said, it brings to mind various prequels and the one that stands out is, you know, how Han Solo got his name and where did he get his blaster and stuff. And there were moments here when I was like, if this wasn't a holiday movie that has me very sort of forgiving and in a very festive mood anyway, it might be a bit ridiculous the way it's like, this is why we send letters to Santa. And, oh, they misinterpreted it, so this is why it looks like he flies. And it turns out he uses reindeers because there were too many toys for a horse to carry, so that's where that idea comes from. And, oh, these silly kids think he comes down the chimney and eats mince pies and all of this thing. And I was like, this is very Santa Claus colon origins. How did you guys feel about that generally? Because, like I said, I was fine with it because of the nature of what the film is, but I can certainly see people who might be like, all right, that's a bit much.
I liked it. And the bit that really got me, the bit that really made me laugh, is when they're in that accident and the sled and the reindeer take off and that kid just looks out of his window and sees them flying over.
Well, yeah, that's awesome. Effect. Yeah, I love it that the use of magic is very subtle. Things happen because that's how they would happen with like gravity and things like that. But there's just this very subtle magic with the wind at the So it's not like everything with the elves and et cetera. Like, we know the Santa Claus origin I guess the United States probably, but I just thought it was great how everything happens for a functional reason. I liked that, how Santa Claus does all these things. I just thought that was great.
Yeah, I think I was fine, like, no problem. Not that I had an issue with it anyway, but I was fine with the idea of Klaus, you know, the kind of sort of tragic backstory, which, again, it links to one of my favorite Christmas movies, Santa Claus the Movie, which is, you know, he wanted children and he always loved kids and would make toys, but he couldn't have kids of his own for whatever reason. And so I was like, oh, I love that. I'm always sort of a sucker for that level of the mythology. And it's tinged with a bit of sadness, but then you get the joy of finding somebody who's like, let's deliver the toys. And that's where this idea kind of came from, that you do that every Christmas. And then even, you know, the very clever and funny way of handling, like, the fact that it's Jesper helping out, so he's the one that naturally decides that the boy that was nasty to him will just get coal. And, and when the boy's like, well, how did he know unless you ratted me out? And then Jesper naturally, to kind of think on his feet, is like, he sees you. He can always tell. And he's got a list of who's, you know, naughty and who's nice. And I was like, this is clever. I like the way you've handled this. Because,
and it is clever. Because the little boy was like a smart butt to him. So he was really the only kid that was actually mean to Jesper. So Jesper's like, oh yeah, well, this is what you get. I'm the tough postman right now. Yeah. And you get
it. Also, it kind of relates to the whole idea of, you know, one selfless deed sparking another, because then the kid's kind of learning that, oh, if you're bad, you know, you won't get things. Mm-hmm. Naturally leads to them being, and again, it's kind of amusing the way they're over the top, like, you know, oh, doing everything helpful so that, you know, Klaus can see us and we see how good we are and reward us better and whatever else. But naturally, because they're being nice to each other and doing good deeds and stuff, that spreads through the previously gray, murky, horrible town, and things become brighter, and it's kind of like, oh,
I know, exactly. Aw.
Which is sweet, but it's also kind of surprising to me that they do even touch on, you know, Jesper saying quite rightly, yeah, but they're only doing it because they know they're going to get something out of it. Everyone's ultimately in it for themselves. And I was like, I didn't expect you to address that idea, because again, it's a holiday movie and they probably would have just thought, you know, whatever. And I'm like, it's interesting that they're going there. And then, you know, they'd subvert it cleverly as well at the end. And, you know, it turns out there's more to it than that. But still, I was quite pleasantly surprised with them touching on that area.
I'm glad they touched on it because, as we know, Jesper's only in it for himself at the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
So
he,
that's where his mindset is. And it's easy to forget that with the happiness from the kids. But, you know, Jesper keeps it going a bit that he's being deceitful.
Yeah. And it comes back around to him at the end when Klaus sort of throws it back in his face and he realizes, oh, you were talking about yourself. Everyone's, you know, got an ulterior motive and whatever. Mm-hmm. But even still, I mean, there are characters that don't. If you look at, I think it's Alva, the character's name. I didn't really get it. The Rashida Jones character.
Alva.
Who she is kind of selfless. I mean, she's at first she's depressed and annoyed, and you know, the warring families don't want their kids taught, so she becomes a fish seller instead of a teacher.
Right. But I know, you know, she's a fishmonger after she went to school with those nuns and they taught her all this stuff. That's what she is now. I know. It's like,
which again is kind of funny, especially knowing it's kind of based on an old whaling town and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And she's like Birgit, like you learn all these fish, the names of the fish and stuff.
Haddock's on special or whatever.
Right, Haddock is on special. But when she reaches into that jar with the coins that's in the fish mouth, she goes to reach for it and then she closes it. Mm. Yeah, and the coins are all interesting looking. They're like square edge. I mean, I just love the animation of this.
It took me half a second to realize, but then when I did, it was one of those things where, you know, when you click what a film's trying to tell you, and I was like, oh, that's her savings.
Yes.
But she was like, I'm saving to get out of here. And for now she's like, years. No, I'm actually gonna put it towards improving the place and building up this school. And like I said, I think that kind of shows that she is kind of selfless. It needed that little spark from everyone else to show her that she had a point in being that way. Mm-hmm. But yeah, mm-hmm. I like that she was kind of, she just wanted to teach them, bless
her. She
did. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, I could have done with a bit more development of the kind of romance between her and Jesper, which kind of came out of nowhere. Like, they even sort of have that line where he's like, well, of course she loved me, you know. Like, oh, okay. I guess we're doing this then.
So, well, Margu brought them together. She's the little heart of the movie, you know. She brought them together.
And you'll have to forgive me. Yeah, DK, you did mention the particular sort of race of that little girl, but I completely forgot what you said.
Oh, I forgot myself.
She's Sami.
Yeah,
Sami.
Yeah, she's Sami. Yeah.
Yeah, such a cute idea. And yeah,
it is.
Yeah, she's so cute. But yeah, how did you feel, DK, about the sort of, well, any of the things we've mentioned, but in particular the idea that, you know, Alva would have this sort of selfless streak and then the love story that kind of came out of nowhere at the end?
I don't know. I like that it wasn't overplayed. You know, you saw them kind of gradually warming. Well, you saw her warming to him, you know, obviously. And then the next thing, you know, they're asleep in the chair. Mm. And yeah, I just thought it was really sweet. I mean, I love the little section. It's the montage where, you know, it shows them up building the little empire. The town's all right now. And then it shows the tribe kind of moving in into Klaus's. And it's becoming, you know, for want of a better word, Santa's workshop. And Alva goes in and watching it happen. I just love it. I'm completely enchanted by this thing.
I know.
It is. It's very like that. And I mean, yeah, that's the whole point of it, isn't it? There's a lot of kind of really cool moments. Like, I shouldn't act surprised about it, but there's some moments that were genuinely quite funny. Like, not, you know, not laugh out loud or anything, but like, moments like I've noted down, like I thought it was really funny when Jesper first arrives and learns, you know, from the very sarcastic ferryman, this is what your accommodations are, get used to it. And then in the morning, he just starts fishing through the snow that's effectively just blocked his way and starts pulling his like things out, and then just pulls out a rat.
And then just jams it back in.
I know.
Exactly. And I was like, that is just brilliant. Because that joke has to have been planned and directed and animated and everything. And I was like, that's so funny. It's out of nowhere, but it's like, and there's other moments like that. That was the one that stood out. But I was like, there's little moments of charm and like humorous things like that throughout the movie.
There are subtle moments. I mean, I love the chickens. They like become part of it. One of the, I think the thing that made me laugh at first was during the sequence where Jasper's doing his very first delivery of the little frog, and he's pretty sure it's a severed head in the box that closet. Yes. I mean, I laughed. It was so great to hear him. And he's just mumbling to himself. It's very muted, you know, and he's just mumbling and, you know, it's funny.
I will get into that a bit with the acting because, Schwartzman does a lot of those things for reasons that I'll get into. But The other, I did actually have one other joke that made me laugh. And this is a bit mean-spirited, so I don't know why it did, but I think it was just because I was caught off guard. And it's when the random villager, when Jesper first arrives again, and he's like trying to get people to be rounded up, and like, does anyone have any post? And then the villager comes walking out and he's like, oh, yay, a person, yay, do you have any? And the person just walks up to like somebody else's washing and like throws paint on it. And I was just like,
I don't know if that was paint. I feel like that was household waste, whatever it may be. You know, that's what I feel like it was, because they're rivals.
It's so much worse.
It really is bad. And it was an old lady, right? So, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, but that's the thing. It's like, oh, look at the cute little old lady coming out to address
yeah,
it.
Yeah, right, right. Nope.
She throws whatever onto this bit of washing, and then randomly they all just start attacking each other. And by that point, we've already had, like, oh, ring the bell, and it's the bell of conflict causes them to fight.
No.
Oh, this is ridiculous, but in the best kind of funny kind of way, you know? Yeah, I liked it. Do you guys have anything else while I'm scrolling quickly through some of my notes to see if anything's coming up?
The humorous things. I've already mentioned the sledge, but where the fisherman's talking and you just see the two houses on the hill in the background and a cannon comes out of one and just blows the other apart.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's this, all of this stuff is going on constantly behind the scenes. Like, there's things like when Jesper's sliding through the town and he's trying to make his Christmas deliveries, there's all these horrible booby traps and everything set in the houses, and all these things like fireworks go off at one of the houses. You know, there's just horrible things happening. And it's miserable for him to try to be a postal worker.
Yeah. And yeah, speaking of that, again, this was another thing that I wrote down that I found amusing is, like I said, they're building up the potential reasons realistically why the legends of like Santa Claus that we know come around. And so they've already mentioned, oh, he comes down the chimney to deliver presents. And as we know, it's actually Jesper that's doing this because he's offered to kind of deliver for free if he gets the postage money and whatever. So Jesper's the one that has to go down the chimney and gets burned basically by the fire and just goes out into the sleigh, and Klaus tries to talk to him and he's just like, shut up. Sit there and be magical while I'm doing all the hard work.
And then the kids start talking about how amazing Klaus is for delivering the toys. And wow, like he gets them in. He go to our house. They're in our house. They're right by the chimney. And it's really Jesper doing it. Jesper's just frustrated. And Klaus is like, hey, what do you want me to do? I make the toys.
Exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I love it. I love the idea. And this is a kind of, a larger theme thing of the writing that tradition comes into it in two ways, and like a good and bad way, because they make a point of saying this, you know, where this conflict is our tradition. We, as long as we live here, we know that the Crumbs hate the Ellingbows and vice versa, and that's our tradition, so we have to stick to it. And like replacing the tradition of hatred with that of joy and happiness, and linking that to Christmas and to Klaus and giving and everything, I thought was a really beautiful kind of central thread to put through this. Mm-hmm. And because at first I was like, why this kind of, you know, like I said, what seemed like a Romeo and Juliet riff of the warring houses, and oh, the kids might be able to care for each other but the adults are at war. And I was like, it was only when I realized during that speech by the Joan Cusack Mrs. Crumb character that I was like, oh, they're making a point that like traditions aren't always good things, but we can, and again, links to the whole selfless good deed sparking another thing, we mm-hmm. can turn them around and turn bad things good, and let's have good traditions happen, you know? So I liked that. And I wasn't, I didn't think it was too heavy handed or anything. I liked it, but I wondered if you guys had even picked up on that or if you had any thoughts around it.
Well, I love how you really start to realize that this feud goes back to the Stone Age, because the art in the museum, and I love the redemption of Smirnsburg. Like I love that whole thing. I'm glad you brought it up.
And the way it's mirrored in the redemption of Jesper. It's exactly the point. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
To that end, yeah, I've written it because it's kind of about the writing is, I was so emotionally devastated when the kid starts crying, when it looks like he's gone back on the boat with his dad and everything. And so kind of relieved when he was like, oh, looks like I missed my boat. And I was like,
I know,
I was like a 3-year-old watching a movie for the first time. Like, I didn't realize this obvious thing was going to happen. And I was just like, yeah.
I know. I cried the first time because Martin was very so emotional. Sad.
You know, the way they play the kid crying, it really tugs on the heartstrings. I was like, oh, the poor kid.
Like, she's really crying, saying his name. scream and wailing, you know, and she's all alone out there. And he's like, hey, what's up? I got you. I'm right here.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I loved it. I loved it.
Oh, me too.
So this is the last thing I have on the writing, but it's a big thing that I kind of found out after the fact, partly. So like you, I noticed that there was definitely something going on with the wind throughout this thing. And like you said, it's you linked it to magic. And I was making notes as to when it happened and when I read the reasoning behind it. Well, I kind of picked up on it afterwards, realizing that the wind apparently is representative of his dead wife, of Klaus's dead wife.
Yes, it's Lydia's breeze. Yeah, that's what I call it.
Yeah, she's manipulating events throughout the film. And I made a note of exactly how many things that she's responsible for, because it really is everything. So it's like, let's see, what's the first one? The first thing it does is blow the drawing into Jesper, which gives him his first inspiration to kind of, you know, try to ask the kid to post letter and whatever else. So that gives you that. It blows the icicles, which blocks the door that keeps Jesper inside of the workshop. It blows that letter over to Klaus, which again gives the idea. Blows on Klaus to change his mind as Jesper offers the services to deliver things for free. It blows through the woods to guide Klaus to Jesper, to the new workshop, and Jesper proposing the link to you know, link this to Christmas and making new toys. It blows as he tells the story about his Lydia, obviously. And as he says, even now, sometimes it almost feels like she's still and cuts off. It blows to the birdhouses a lot because that was, he says, she loved birds. That's why he kept making them. And, you know, it as their friendship grows, I think it kind of grows, the wind grows a little bit stronger. And at the end, as I said, the audience, cue to cry, because you probably will, it blows naturally as he sort of sees it blowing and just says, I'm coming, love, at the end of his life, which is so beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time. So, yeah, at that point I was... That point was when the tears did come. Like, I was like, oh, I'm stoic throughout. And even with the crying kid and Jesper looking like he'd ran off, I was fine. And then, yeah, it was the I'm coming, love, that I was just like, nope, I'm gone. I'm done. So, yeah. How did you guys feel about just the whole wind idea generally and sort of the things I mentioned leading up to that moment?
Go ahead,
DK, you haven't spoken for a while. Let's come to you.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on a lot of that you did. But, yeah, it was a nice little motif throughout. I did pick up on the birdhouses and obviously, you know, the wind while he's chopping the woods and stuff. But yeah, when it all becomes clear and you know, at the end where he says, you weren't the only one that were gone.
Oh,
no. It was just holy crap.
You guys were both cursing. You're like, Adrian, I know.
What a new job he was.
At that point, I was like, I get why you like it. It's emotional. At the very end of the movie was when I cursed you and was like, why did you do this to me? Which I think I actually messaged you and was like, why would you do this?
Right, yeah. Lydia's a character in the movie. Even though we don't see her, her spirit is there. She knows Klaus is needing something. And she knows Jesper is here and also needing something. And maybe she has an idea of what the future could hold. And she brings them together in such a way that it just changes their existence from being both being sad and alone for both of them, you know. And eventually we have the redemption for Jesper. And I just feel like her magic wind has so much to do with that. Yeah,
her magic wind.
Her magic breeze. Lydia's magic breeze.
That would have been a very different movie.
That's true. Oh, you too.
Sorry, I couldn't help that. Hey, did you guys have any last year sort of overall thoughts on the writing and the plot that we haven't touched on yet?
I just thought it was, you know, really tight. You walk a fine line with these films. You can get overly schmaltzy. And I think this just did it where it needed to. And it kept the humor in it. And I think maybe because it dipped into, you know, other genres and you didn't know exactly where it was going, it didn't set off like, oh, this is going to be a happy, jolly kind of thing.
I feel like it's also because it's earned.
Yes.
In a way, sometimes it isn't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And when you look, I mean... As you said earlier, it does take a while to get going. Mm. So you're not quite sure where it is going. And when you look at it, it's only, I think, just over an hour and a half long.
It's 95 pounds, I think. Yeah,
and it does fit a lot in.
It does, yeah. But it doesn't feel short either. It doesn't feel like
you're... Oh, no.
Yeah, it's... I think it's perfect, though, for, like you said, because I can see this being a family favourite and kids watching it that time of year. And for that, I think it's a perfect length because you don't, you know, kids' attention spans at the best of times aren't great. So, you know,
I will say, as soon as it finished, I got on Amazon to see if I could find it on Blu-ray. Because I know you know, even though it's Netflix, sometimes, occasionally, they do that kind of thing. But, yeah, I was annoyed.
Yeah, you know Netflix. It's not surprising, is it? It's a shame because, again, I feel like, well, most families, I guess, would have Netflix. But, yeah, I can see it becoming the equivalent of my kind of Muppets Christmas Carol Santa Claus, the movie that I watch every year. Or you'll appreciate this, DK, but it'll mean nothing to our American audience, having to watch The Snowman every year.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
Again, we'll come to you first, Adrienne. Who did you want to single out first and talk about with the acting in the movie? Excuse me.
Well, okay. I'll just say Hollywood royalty, Jason Schwartzman, you know, it does so great in it. And of course, Joan Cusack, she goes overboard. But for this particular one, I'm going to give it to J.K. Simmons, you know, as Klaus. I think the scene where he talks about Lydia's passings and his feeling of being lost afterwards, I just think that is an incredible piece of voice acting right there. I love it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
we'll
of course,
our
sweet little Margu. Oh, she's so cute. Margu, sorry, she's so sweet.
Yeah. Especially knowing that, as you said, it was a little young actress who doesn't actually speak any English, and she's just delivering this cute performance through, like you said, like acting it, you know, translators, I guess, and directing by gestures and stuff. Anyway, since we've brought him up, yeah, like I said, I loved it. It's not, I don't think it's necessarily the acting so much as the writing, but I love that he's completely stoic for the first part of the movie. That he barely says anything, like a word at a time or something. And then he finally breaks when the reindeer start like galloping along. And
And isn't his first word like he's shoving the drawing into Jesper's face and he's like, "Where's this?" Mm. That might be his first line in the movie.
Yeah. Or even like little moments like later on when he finally does accept Jesper's help making the new toys and Jesper sort of goes to talk to him and he just points like, "No, work." We've known people like that and it's kind of, I like that characterization really a lot. But yeah, I love, like, again, humorous moments like when I said when he finally breaks that stoic demeanor and him and Jesper, you know, have that childish moment of glee of like, "Yay!" And then they just both realize it and snap out of it and kind of like,
right. we're not buddies. We're not buddies at all.
Right. We are men. Mm, yeah. Yeah. Any last thoughts on J.K. Simmons from either of you? Then
I just think it's a very understated performance, and I love him for it.
Yes. Oh yeah, completely. And yeah, heartbreaking at the end, just in that one.
Oh. And the animation in that ending. With the face, the aging. Oh,
anyway. I'll talk about the animation when we get to the direction and the effects.
Okay.
I have thoughts on it. But,
do you? Huh? I wouldn't imagine.
Yeah. So,
do you? I don't know. Yeah.
So going back to the acting then, we obviously have to talk about Jason Schwartzman, who's the lead. Yeah, suffice to say, I was reading up again on this movie after I watched it, because I often do if I've enjoyed something, spoiler alert, and I read that the directors of the film say that about 30% of what Jason Schwartzman is saying is scripted, and the rest is all ad-libbed, which they just animated to later. He just kind of riffed. And you get that sense in moments like this. You said the moment about like the severed head or bit where he's like, "Well, you didn't have these attached. I would never have done what I did if it weren't attached. How do you not attach?" You can kind of tell it's just him being let loose to riff and do his thing. And I was like, I love it. And I love, even within the character, it's great how you get the growth from the entitled whiny brat to like, you know, selfless family man. But yeah, it's great. Even within that kind of cliche, Schwartzman, because he is presumably so talented, like I said, just riffs so well. He's funny at times, breaks your heart in moments like, you know, "I missed the boat" and whatever. So, yeah, I think it's a fantastic lead performance, which if it wasn't a great actor, I could potentially have sunk the movie because he is the central idea, and particularly because you have to not like him for the first, like, at least half, when it's like, you know, he just selfishly wants to get out of there or whatever.
Right. But you're still rooting for him. It's funny. You know, you don't like him, but you want him to succeed. But he's such a turd half the time, you know? But you.
That's the thing. I think he's a turd, but in a way that is somehow still charming and funny. It's kind of, you can't hate him because you're just kind of like, oh, bless you. Away, and that's in the performance, like I said, because he doesn't come across as a mean-spirited person,
Just lazy. He wants to stay home and have servants. Entitled, yeah.
He's not evil in the way, and I mean, putting him against these town that are just like, no. So he doesn't come off as bad in comparison, anyway. Thoughts from you guys on Jason Schwartz?
Well, I love that he was able to bring this character to life like this, and I love that he had fun. It's great, and I love him with all his Wes Anderson stuff. So just listening to him have fun do this and have listen to his range, I just thought was great.
And I forgot to mention, that's my last thing on Jason Schwartzman. A perfect example of his range is the repeated line, which I really loved that they did in the writing when he starts out like, "What am I supposed to do? Just stay here forever and whatever?" And he says it sarcastically at first, and then says it realizing that it's exactly what he wants at the end of the movie, and I'm just like, so well handled that it's the same exact words, but it's all in the way he delivers it. It goes from "this is my horrible punishment" to "this is everything I've ever wanted" kind of thing, and I was like, this is so well done. Anyway, DK, any thoughts on the acting generally from anything we haven't touched on?
I do like Rashida Jones as Alva. I think she does really well, and I didn't know who it was for the longest time. I had to, doing that, you know, Gen X thing at the moment, pausing it to look up who it is. And I thought she was really good,
Away, but I'm obsessed with like The Office, Parks and Rec, and Angie Tribeca, so I know that voice.
See, I don't watch any of those.
I don't either. I don't know those.
Yeah, so I had no idea who it was.
I love Alva too, DK, because she's disenchanted, but when she starts to teach the kids, it's just so sweet. And then of course when they come to her porch, and apparently she knows enough Sami to help them out like that, so I think her character is wonderful.
Yeah
I agree, and I think I can see why you might say that you didn't necessarily recognize her at first, because she's actually playing against type at the start when she's so embittered. And she does it so well, which is a range that I've never really seen her play in these kind of sitcoms, because they're sitcoms, why would you? You know what I mean?
But she's not happy.
Yeah, but she plays it so well. And again, you don't hate her. You feel for her, but she plays this. And it's, like I said, it surprised me because it is against her usual type. And on a similar note, I was equally surprised by Joan Cusack, because maybe I just haven't seen enough, but I've never really seen her as this sort of evil, full-on, like, I've seen her in Adam's Family Values where she's the comedic villain kind of thing, but I've never really seen her play the outright, fully despised, and I really do hate that character. She's
me too. Hate her.
Particularly at the end when they're like, let's get rid of one and then let's attack the other.
So one's gone, one to go.
I think both of those ladies are great at playing against their usual types and yet totally believable. So I only have one other person to mention, but before that, any other notes on the two ladies that I've mentioned or anyone else?
You can tell it's Joan as soon as she starts talking.
Yeah And to a lesser extent, Will Sasso as Mr. Ellingbo is good, but I think he's overshadowed because the others are so good,
really.
Yeah, obviously, you've already mentioned sort of briefly this being the last role of the late, great Norm MacDonald, who is just such a good actor, particularly when it comes to that kind of deadpan, sarcastic comedy. As I said, being a fan of like everything from Family Guy to The Orville, I've heard him do voice roles and I know he can bring it. So hearing him as this kind of the ferryman character who should be an a-hole, basically, but even when he is being, it's funny. It's really witty when he's like, "Oh, help me out with all these bags. I've got a bad back." Yeah. You know? That is perfect, and it is a perfect casting to deliver that without coming across just like a jerk.
You know? Right. He really did. He really played Mogens just to the T. But, he's so sarcastic, and in the end he gets a surprise too. He's glad everything's happening.
You can kind of get the sense though that although he's a sarcastic and arguably mean, he's not like that deep down. He's kind of, it's just exterior. He isn't really a bad person.
He's pretending, but he's having fun with the new guy because he knows the new guy is kind of not that nice either. Like, oh, you think you're going to come here and have a good time? Well, come and meet everybody,
Exactly. Yeah.
And I like the way Alva, when they kind of meet in her fishmonger school, and Mogens walks in, and she goes, "Mogens," like they all know each other, and this is a new guy, and
So then any last thoughts on the acting before I go to direction?
Well, I thought it was interesting and kind of fun that Sergio Pablos played the voice of Pumpkin, kid. I mean, the young, whatever you want to call it, young adult. Just he's saying.
That's the one at the very end who says mine, and then.
Yeah, that's all she says is mine. But it's him. It's Sergio Pablos doing that voice, so that's kind of funny.
It's quite an important little moment as well, though, so that's kind of cool.
Right. That's her favorite word, but it all works out in the end for her.
Then she sort of finds her love and holds his hand and says, mine, and then that's
exactly. That's nice.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to spoil too much forever. Well, I suppose you've got to have seen the film if you're listening to this. If not, you probably should have.
I've only got yourself to blame.
Well, exactly. I've kind of lumped direction and sort of visual effects together because it's an animated movie, so logically they are the same, I suppose. TK, we haven't come to you first, so do you have any sort of thoughts initially on the direction or the effects here or the animation?
I just think this looks beautiful. Yes, it does rely on CG for the lighting, and obviously you can tell that CG's used when I think he's first traveling to Klaus's workshop as it's flying over the canyons. But other than that, this is such a strong case to be made for why we shouldn't give up on hand-drawn animation. I just think it's beautiful from top to bottom. And there are little sections in this that remind me of, I cannot remember place the exact point, but it might be the scene where Adrian was referring to earlier, where he's going from house to house posting and he's stumbling upon the different booby traps. But the lighting on that reminded me so much of the early Warner Brothers Looney Tunes cartoons. It was I can't get over how just amazing this looked.
Yeah,
it is visually just absolutely stunning, and it makes me want to go there. I love how he took this this old place, this Smeerenberg, this actual Danish whaling yard or whatever, and turned it into this beautiful birthplace of the Santa Claus myth. That story is amazing, and wasn't it his directorial debut?
I believe so. Yeah.
I mean, he just really. And I love the lighting, like you were saying, DK, of course, but I love the lighting when what I really like, how they do the lighting, because I guess the days are so short up in the north, so there's always a chance to have this incredible lighting. And for me, it really showed when the reindeer are being brought into the fold, like they're being made part of the team, and you can just see through the trees and everything, this beautiful lighting. And I love that.
Yeah,
cool. Yeah, I mean, I basically, without wanting to just repeat what you guys have said, I kind of said the same thing. Like, initially, we've already mentioned, I love how kind of expressionistic it almost is when it's like, this place is dreary and horrible. Mm-hmm. But like you, I was kind of, because it's slow to start, I was paying particular attention. And I love when we first get to Jesper's initial sort of place that he's going to live. And like you said, the way that the light shines through the slats and the holes in the... It's just like, this is gorgeous. This is like kind of lighting that live action directors would kill for. It
looks so good. Yeah. And in the morning when he has to go potty and the it's out across this boards. I mean, there's wind and there's toilet paper rolling around, and the use of light there is just showing you like it's dawn, and it's cold.
I felt that
cold too. I really was really cold.
I'm going to jump onto that because equally, when we first see Alva's house, I felt really warm. And I think it was deliberate because, like, in this area where everything kind of dark and a little bits of light are shining through in small shafts and whatever, when you first go to Alva's house, I was like, it just looks warm and comfy mm-hmm. and cozy. Yes, and I think yeah. that's a deliberate thing about, like, that's her character. When she's out of this, like, oh, I'm stuck in this fish
right.
school. she's a warm school person, naturally.
And that's my joke, school of fish.
School of fish.
Yeah, but you see that Alva's roof, like you, like when you see the roof of the post office, it's completely dilapidated. It's terrible. Yeah. But Alva's roof has like one hole in it, but it's thick with snow. And there's a couple stray arrows here and there, but she kind of provides a stable environment, whereas the post office is just
yeah.
to pieces, you know. Yeah.
Neglected, really, yeah.
Really well, neglected. But the chickens are there. The chickens are trying, Mike. I mean, give them a break. They're trying.
They do. They do their best. But no, and I think it's, for me, it's beautiful that a macrocosm of this, the way that the town itself lights up as more and more sort of happy things happen. I've written down the note because I was trying to watch the movie and not write too much, so I didn't give it much thought, and I've just written, ooh, it looks all Christmassy now. Yeah. When you kind of go to the main village, and I was like, yeah, but it does. That's kind of the point, isn't it? Yeah. Suddenly it's gone from dark and miserable with little bits of light to like festive colored lights everywhere.
Yeah. And the whale has lights. The whale is the pinnacle. It's the Christmas tree, you know.
Yeah.
It is the shape of the tree, and it's got lights on it. It's just so pretty. Because when he got there, he went right under the whale skeleton, and it was scary.
Absolutely, yeah. I love it. And in terms of direction, a couple of things that I noticed, like I said, because I was trying to watch the movie. First of all, that gorgeous zoom in when Klaus delivers his first toy, and you zoom from inside the house to the window as he's watching just the joy he's brought the kid. Mm. I was like, that is a gorgeous shot, and the fact that it's animated is just epic. And obviously the sleigh chase I just thought was really exciting, and not easy to animate something like that because it's just constant motion, and yet I thought they did a very good job with it.
And
I love the way everything's shaded, the use of shading in the animation I think is very good. And I have one last note, which is I love that, like I said, everything gets more and more colorful, and that obviously feeds into the origin of Santa, or Klaus's, sorry, being given the red suit by everyone as they get sort of. And I'm going to use this opportunity. I hope I haven't brought this out on the podcast already, but to dust off an old anecdote that I've mentioned 1,000 times. Sorry if you know me, you've probably heard this a few times. But the origin of Santa's red suit. Are you guys familiar with this idea that it's comes where it comes from?
No, do tell.
It's like a Coke. Well,
yeah, exactly. Santa Claus traditionally, or Saint Nick, or whatever you want to say, was always green. The coat was always green. That was what he wore. And then in, I think, the 1920s or some point in the early 20th century, Coca-Cola decided that they wanted to use Santa Claus at Christmas for their marketing.
Yes.
And because Coke cans are red, they changed the green to red. And that's now why Santa wears a red outfit. Capitalism. Yay.
Those Americans, you know. What are we going to do?
I did like that he started off in green.
Yeah.
So yeah, any notes on direction, special effects? I've only got music and sound to go to next, but again, that's all of my notes. So do you guys have anything on those two things?
Not me.
Nope.
Right, anything on the music or sound that you wanted to bring up? Obviously, there's quite a bit of it, so.
Really nice score. And I do like that. I think there's only about, I mean, and this could be me, was there only around 3 songs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The ballad that plays, like, as they give the montage and they pan around, is, I think, the same thing that plays at the end, something about imagination.
Or something. How do you like me now? And when he tells that bad kid off, and then he's all gangster and struts back to the post office. That one,
yeah,
well.
The random that's like 5 minute rap, or not random, like 50-second rap, or whatever that comes out of.
He goes, "That's what you get when you mess with the postman."
Exactly, yeah.
That was so
weird and jarring, but I just couldn't
love it. Well, yeah. Because he found, you know, that little kid is on the naughty list. And basically, he, you know, Jasper's on the naughty list because he's being naughty. But he has to show this little kid that he, you know, that's where he became like The Tough Postman. That's how I love that little song. Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah, I said this. Other than that, I just said the same as you. All of the sort of things that I noticed were part of the score. So the sweet tune when Jesper first discovers the toys, the big epic crescendo when Jesper proposes, oh, you could deliver the toys. How jaunty it is while Jesper's like going through all these tribulations of, oh, everyone thinks you're magical and I'm the one going through all this. The use of Silent Night, I thought, was a clever interspersing at the end, especially considering we know the history of that and, you know, linking it to Christmas truce and peace and everything. Mm-hmm. And the very festive sort of Christmas morning montage at the end was accompanied by suitably Christmassy music, I thought. And this is so random, but I got so excited when the kids were singing Once I Caught a Fish Alive, because that's like something that we used to sing as kids.
I had never heard that before. Yeah, never. Really? I had not heard that.
I watched it with my wife, and I'm singing it along with the kids.
Yeah, me too. Like,
you know this? Well, yeah.
Once I Caught a Fish Alive, which
no, never heard
on
it.
My right. Yeah. No, oh, man, it's
what is it for?
It's just a nursery rhyme that we all sing.
Oh,
yeah.
I see. I don't know.
I suppose it kind of helps with counting because it starts, what is it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, once I caught
official life. 6, 7, okay. 8, 10, then I let it go again.
Huh. I didn't know it.
Because it bit my finger so.
I thought it was like some sort of indigenous
I mean, it might be indigenous to England.
In Marinsburg. I thought it was written for the. Oh, well, never mind.
I'm so relieved that DK has the same experience and it wasn't just my family that randomly just...
No.
Yeah, I did the same. I sang along with it and was like, oh, this brings me right back to my childhood.
I was like, this is really a random thing. Well, she made up kind of a cool little rhyme. Okay.
No, it's an existing nursery rhyme. But yeah, yeah, that's all I have anyway on music and sound. So anything from you guys before we relapse back to our childhood even further.
No, that's all I have.
Well, I had an appreciation for the use of the woodwinds during the magical swirling scenes with Lydia's wind. And also, you guys hopefully will watch this movie again someday, but pay special attention to the sound that the mechanical frog makes. It sounds so real to me. Like if a mechanical wood frog, when you wind it up and it's just this little tut, 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 tut. And I just think whoever did that was really skilled because for sure that frog is real and it's hopping around somewhere. I love that. I love Zara Larsson singing the song, Invisible. But I especially love the triumphant music that is played when the kids go around town and they do all their good deeds and they start shining up the town and they're painting and they're fixing things. That's just a wonderful part of the score for me.
Yeah. Yeah. There's loads of moments like that. It's fantastic musical score and sound design. And it's just occurring to me now, but I suppose in a way you could argue the use of a bell either for the kind of conflict starting the fighting, but also the wind chimes. So one's like evil, one's like all of the good. So,
right.
Which I guess that's literally never occurred to me till just now. But again, I only watched the film for the first time a day ago. Leave me
to pick everything up.
Right. Yeah. There's also the wood clanging of all the birds' nests, the little birdhouses, and as the wood is, they're kind of beating together or tapping each other. I mean, it just, it's so perfect for me. And it just, somebody really knew what they were doing with the wind, the wood.
It helps the immersion, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Brilliant. Shall we move on to our favorite character moment and line?
Go for it.
Great. So, Adrienne, we'll start with you. Favorite character in the movie?
My favorite character, I'm just going to have to say, it's kind of a tie for me. I mean, Margu, I love her so much. But to me, what brought this place to life is simply the city of Smearensburg. It becomes alive. And to me, it's a character. So I'm putting that's my favorite character.
Okay. Fair enough. DK, what about you?
It's going to be Jesper.
Any reasons particularly why?
I just love that he's sort of like mini redemption arc, that he was this selfish little thing at the start, and
you know, by the time of the end, he's just a completely different person. And I love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I said exactly the same thing. I wrestled with it because I was like, it's who is my favorite character? And I wanted to go with Klaus and Alva and everything. But ultimately, I picked Jesper because he goes through the most growth. Like, they're good throughout, but he actually has this journey. And I was like, I think. And again, he's the central character, so he's who you're following. So, yeah, I also went with Jesper. Favorite moment in the film, Adrienne, or scene?
I have honorable mentions. I probably just ramble. Okay, so my honorable mentions, I've mentioned a bunch of times, but the magic breeze swirling around Jesper when Klaus has his epiphany about, you know, maybe he should make Jesper part of his life. I love the transformation of the school using the clothesline kind of a thing. It used to have fish hanging on it. Now it has children's art. Let's see. I love when Alva invites Jesper and Margot into the school and it's sun getting dark and Jesper doesn't understand her and he goes to the school for help. And I love that, especially when Margot and Alva kind of chuckle together, maybe possibly at Jesper's expense. We don't know because it's in Sami, but it's funny. But I'm just going to say my absolute favorite scene is just Margot on the ice with her ice sled. It's such, it gives me chills just thinking about it. It's the height of the song. It's just so beautiful. I love that she's just the heart of this movie. You know, she keeps being disappointed. Every time she goes to Jesper, he kind of pushes her aside. And she just has this incredible moment. She sees the gift outside of her home. And it's so cold, and I just love that. So that's my favorite.
Oh, awesome. And what about you, Mr. D. Klaus? What is your
favorite? You know, that's funny.
It's such a shame Sandy wasn't on this.
Why?
For the name alone, just a Sandy Klaus.
That's so good. Hopefully she'll listen and chuckle.
Oh, good, we didn't think of that.
It just occurred to me. It's just as you said that. I like the whole montage where I mentioned it earlier, where they're building up kind of like the myth. And there's a bit where they go out on the ice and you see the shadow of the whale underneath.
Yes.
Yes.
Love that.
It looks so real. It's awesome. Amazing.
Yeah. I've already mentioned my favorite moment, and again, it's kind of pathetic because I didn't, you know, I was suckered into something obvious, but for me, it was the fake out of the devastated kid because Jesper looks like he's gone back with his father on the boat and everything, and then the beautiful relief of I missed my boat, I'm still here. And that got me so to pick that as my favorite moment. There's lots of things I could have. I was like, yeah, that was the one that really. I was like, oh, I'm invested in this movie. It turns out. let's go with the most obvious thing in the world and ask for all three of us to say the same thing, probably. What's your favorite line in the movie?
Oh, well, this is going to be a tricky one, isn't it?
Yep. Okay, I have a, why don't you guys go first?
Go on, Mike.
What happened to him after that? How? Why? I can't even begin to comprehend. I stopped trying to make sense of it a long time ago. What I do know is that once a year, I get to see my friend.
Oh, the tears. Oh, the crying.
That is my...
I'm guessing that that was everybody's favorite line.
That's my honorable mention. That part makes me cry every time. And, you know, I love that part. But I would still say my favorite is simply when Margot, and it's just one line, she says, "Yahoo!" Because she's on the ice and she's free and she got her toy from Santa Claus. So I love that part. That would be my favorite line.
Oh, yeah, that was the second ending to something that left me crying for 10 minutes afterwards in as many weeks. The first one was the ending of Doom Patrol, which if you haven't seen it yet, DK, prepare really? Yourself.
I haven't.
Oh, boy. If you think the end of this made you cry. Oh, boy.
God.
Oh, dear. I'm going on just thinking about it. Oh, my God. Sorry.
I do like the fact that this show is probably the only place in the world where we can be talking about Klaus and cross-reference it with Doom Patrol.
It's a safe space. It's you can do whatever you want here. It's very stream of consciousness approving.
We're nerds. It's what we do.
We do, anyway. Don't we? So we're pretty bad in a good way.
So again, we're going back to one of our usual sections then, which is the audience interaction. We always put out, as you know, something onto our various social medias asking, what did you think of this movie? And this was no exception. And we had some responses, not a huge amount, but I would imagine if you want to send something to us as you hear this, because I probably would think there's a lot more people who have a connection to this movie, and I'd love to hear from you if that is the case. But for now, we have the response that we did get, and I've split the responses that we got between Adrienne and DK so that you don't just hear the same voice all the time. So shall we start with you, Adrienne?
Of course.
You can give us the feedback that you have, first of all.
Absolutely. Well, one of our own from our little Discord, Jamie, he says, an absolute banger of a Christmas film with glorious animation, a brilliant heart, an interesting story, and Jason Schwartzman with 3 exclamation marks. He says, the liar reveal plotline is my only major problem with the film, but sadly, it's a big one. I still love it, though, and I'm going to rewatch it soon. Thank you, Jamie. And then there are 3 pieces of input from the Nerdy Up North community. And Jennifer
on Facebook.
Okay. Thank you for that. It says Jennifer Christian here, one of the top contributors, gives it 5 stars. Love the film and the sentiment. And we watch it every year multiple times since its release. Oh. Fern Prince says, had totally forgotten about this, but I enjoyed it a lot. Proper heartwarming with a hearts, facey hearts emoji. Oh. And Derek John Anderson says, second best Christmas film next to Muppet Christmas Carol. Now, doesn't this man seem like somebody that should join our community? I mean, he loves Chris Muppets and he loves this film. So, yeah. I mean, like, we love him too, apparently.
Absolutely.
I also have one. I have one from my actual husband, David.
Oh, go for it, please.
Okay. David says, how Klaus isn't on every top 10 Netflix must stream now list across the web is a mystery to me. And that is regardless of the time of year. Klaus is a moving, powerful, fun, and believable twist on the story of Santa that every child and adult can believe in. That's and awesome. By the time the end credits roll and the heart-snatching soundtrack plays, you want to believe again. Klaus with a K is a gem and must stream this holiday season on repeat for all of us.
Oh, my God. I just have to say, Adrienne, your husband has almost made me start blubbing again.
Yeah, when I can sit David down and ask him to do something and he actually does it, he just really does something well. I mean, it's not often that I can force him to do something because he's my husband, but this I kept saying, please put your input in. So he just sent this right now.
You have to get
now.
Him on the podcast if he's that good. Oh, if he doesn't work in advertising, he should, because that's a heck of a hard sell for the movie.
He should be in copywriting with that.
He has splashes of brilliance, which is, you know, very lovable. About him.
There love speaks a long-suffering spouse.
love the man.
Oh, bless. Awesome. So, DK, you have some more feedback for us, I believe.
Yeah, I'm going back to the Nerdy Up North, and I just have to do a quick aside to what Adrienne said, that person should be on our in our community because they love Muppets, and I'm not quite sure how to take that, but I am.
What do you mean? Why is that?
It's kind of an insult in this country to call somebody a Muppet.
Oh, is it?
Dickie and I are both Muppets in more ways than one.
Yes.
Okay, I'll say he loves Jim Henson production.
You Muppet.
Oh, I see. That's funny.
Well, in all fairness, you are right on both accounts. So
exactly. Hey, I'm proud.
So yeah. So back to the Nerdy Up North community on Facebook, and Leonie Gillen says, "Great film. We watch it as a family every Christmas now, and they give it 5 stars." Sarah Cooley also gives it 5 stars. She says it's an incredible movie. Sarah Armstrong says 5 out of 5. It's a beautiful Christmas movie, from the story to the animation, the comedy and emotion. We love it, and it's becoming our regular Christmas Eve watch. Makes me cry every time, and the theme song is beautiful. I have it on my Christmas playlist. Sinead Esther McCauley says, I absolutely love this. It's my favorite Christmas movie, and I watch it every year now. And she's also given it 5 stars. And Riley Booms says, it was a beautiful film. And they've also given it 5 stars. This is just sweeping the board. over on the Silver Screen podcast page, Rick Cowling says, I really enjoyed this. A clever, well thought out and produced take on the legend of Father Christmas. 4 out of 5. And Nicola Thomas says, gorgeous film. Room always gets dusty. And another 4 out of 5 on that.
Awesome. Fantastic. And is that all the feedback? Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Okay, so again, all that remains then is to give our conclusions and our score out of 5 stars, as we always do. Who shall we go to first? Oh, it's got to be Adrienne, hasn't it?
It has to, doesn't it?
Adrienne, do you have your conclusion and your score ready for us?
Well, you know, my score is going to be high. I give this movie a 9.5. I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful movie.
Again, out of 5, Adrienne.
let's give this movie. Oh, I want to give it 5.
Yeah, you're more than welcome to.
Okay, good. This movie gets 5 stars. It's such a heartwarming film. I love it. I can't say enough positive things about it. Love everybody that's in it. I love the acting. I love the directing. I love the animation and the music. So I try to get everybody I know to watch it. Mm. And there is a little story I have about that. Maybe we'll do it at the end of the pod, about something that just happened a few days ago regarding this movie, after you guys give your scores. Oh, if you like.
Interesting. Yeah, intriguing. Hopefully that keeps the audience listening, because I want to know that. Awesome. So yeah, DK, coming to you, your conclusion and your score are 5 stars.
Okay. It feels a little Emperor's New Groove on more than one occasion to me, but once I got past that, this is one of the best Christmas movies to come out in some time. It's a great premise, brilliantly executed. The voice cast is wonderful. It's at times both hilarious and emotional, and switches between both effortlessly. The animation is just gorgeous, and it hits you right in the feels. A beautiful and fun movie. I very, very rarely give anything 5 out of 5, but I think I'm going to have to.
Wow.
Okay.
No pressure, Mike. No pressure, mate.
pressure is on here. So my conclusion is, let's see. Well, I don't know about you, but I cried. Oh, that was a bit good, wasn't it? I would imagine it's best watched with a mince pie and maybe some eggnog if you're into that kind of thing. It was the perfect start to my Christmas season. I can definitely see how this has become a lot of people's go-to Christmas film, and I love that it continues that tradition for new generations. Okay, the story isn't especially unique or groundbreaking, but it's all in the execution, and that's what makes this a bit special. I won't lie. It probably won't replace my own choice of Christmas Eve viewing, but I'm very set in my ways with that. But it is just a beautiful piece of well-crafted magic that I am happy to recommend to anyone, and which can sit happily alongside the best and most beloved of those festive staples. Drumroll. I gave it 5 out of 5.
What the? Which, all the oxygen in this room has just been sucked out.
Yeah, I also very rarely do it, but when you can get me with a familiar story and still make me emotionally wrecked at the end of it in the most impactful of ways, yeah, it had to be done. So yeah, I mean, the average is going to be difficult to work out, isn't it? So suffice to say, what we have here, I think, is a first. The average score for the podcast is a perfect 5 out of 5 for Klaus.
God. Is that the first ever?
It is the first fully perfect score we've ever had. Yeah.
Oh my word.
Wow.
And suffice to say, why Netflix didn't realize they had something really special and market the crap out of this, I will never know. But yeah, if you haven't seen it, please, well, if you haven't seen it, first of all, you shouldn't listen to this. But yeah, I think, yeah, if you've seen it, you probably know how special it is. If you have seen it and you haven't gone back, maybe go back and give it another watch, especially as we enter this particular time of year. And yeah, what else can I say? Our first perfect film. Very, very fitting. I think very worthy. So,
wow,
Adrian,
you had
a story while we all recover from
while everybody's wiping their eyes and being flabbergasted and putting oxygen tanks on their faces here in masks. So, a little story is very recent. Actually, it's just this week. You know, my mom and I have a seasonal heirloom tomato plant business. So, since it's only for a few months of the year, I find other work at other months. And I decided that I would do something that I think is helpful for families. And it is working with people who are living with dementia. So I have gone through the training of working with these lovely people. And on Friday, I went to a home where my task there is to keep the patient and the woman safe and happy and you know, make sure she eats and takes her meds and doesn't fall out of bed or anything else, and you know, do my thing. But this is a house with 6 kids and all of their friends. So when I was over there, it was just pure chaos. It was insane. And they were watching these little Christmas movies about an elf on a shelf, and they're just these little tiny, like, half hour, maybe, I don't even know if they're that long. But it was keeping the kids entertained. And then she asked me if there's anything like I would like to have playing in the background. And I said, well, has anybody seen Klaus? And they hadn't. Well, of course, it lost the little kids and their friends for a while. But the mom loved it. She was kind of trying to watch as best she could while she's playing, you know, with the kids and everything. And I was at the table with my person. And as soon as the song Invisible started playing, when they're going to up north to where Margot and her family are, as soon as the song started playing, every person in that room, including the lady that I was working with, turned and looked at the television during the song. Like, it was all you could hear in that room for the first time all day was this song. They all loved it. They just were mesmerized by watching everything happen. And I just wanted to put it out there, you know, that it calmed the savage room. This room was just crazy. And everybody stopped to look and listen. And it was a lovely moment.
Awesome.
That's my story. Oh, that's, yeah.
I can imagine, yeah, it is that kind of film. I can definitely see that. And like I said, mm-hmm. It's I can strongly recommend it to younger people, yes, or families.
Yes.
There's nothing in it that's inappropriate for children or anything like that. And it's just very, yeah, maybe not necessarily for Christmas Eve night in the height of all that emotion, like I said, because you will be,
yes,
you'll be needing tissues by the end of it. But awesome. Great stuff. So that will conclude our business here. Believe it or not, this wasn't even our official Christmas special. It just, wow. I'm pleased we waited until at least vaguely near the Christmas,
which is now going to pale in comparison to this one.
I know, right? But we do have that coming up. But we do have another episode as well in the meantime. So hopefully you enjoyed this. If you did, please like, share, subscribe. Please spread the word. We're trying to build the podcast. We're doing all right, but we can always do a little bit more. Again, if you want to leave any thoughts on this movie or anything else we've covered, feel free to leave a comment on our YouTube page, or you can find the links to all of our social media in the episode descriptions. I'm mostly monitored by me because DK is a bit of a shut-in, a bit of a Klaus at the start of the movie situation when it comes to hiding from the world. But you can always find me or the podcast, see our Discord, which is a good, safe place. Where we make lots of good friends, and
we really do.
And so Adrienne, do you have anywhere that you want to shout out where people can find you?
I am on Threads, which I like, at Beanie Baller SoCal, and I'm here on the Discord. I've been on Twitter X for a while, but I'm kind of transitioning out. So yeah,
I think we all are, basically. I forget, we're both on Blue Sky as well, but it doesn't seem to be all that active at the moment. But we're there, myself and Adrienne, if you could find us.
And our Discord. Come on over. Discord. It's fun. It's a nerdy, nerdy place, but you know.
Oh, it's ridiculous at times, but yeah, it's a safe place to just be as silly and as nerdy as we often get.
That's
sometimes.
Right.
Awesome. So any last thoughts from either of you on anything we've talked about, by the way? No. Well, so yeah, hopefully enjoy your Christmas season or your festive season, whichever holidays you celebrate, and enjoy watching the movies and experiencing the joy and the traditions that you hopefully are. We will be back next week. We are entering a world of pure imagination with the aforementioned Sandy Evanson, who's joining us again next week. And we are going to be handing the reins to DK as we look at the cult classic film, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So, yeah, keeping things a little bit relevant. I think it's one of those kind of family movies that we could enjoy this time of year. But it's also, you know, it has a prequel due out in cinemas, maybe. So, yeah, double whammy of why we're looking at that. And the week after, Adrienne and Sandy are combining, like, the best Captain Planet team that we have of our two favorite ladies. And our official Christmas special with myself, DK, and those two ladies will be looking at Richard Donner's Scrooged, the reimagining of A Christmas Carol with Bill Murray. So stay tuned for that.
Absolutely.
Hopefully we'll have more information soon as regards a end of year kind of special live episode we should have coming up, which I'm putting together and working on. And again, we'll announce that in due course. I don't feel like our traditional send-off is appropriate, so I'm going to throw it open to either of you. Do you have a sign-off that we can use this
week? I think we should give it to Adrienne this time.
Oh, you guys. Well, I will simply say this. A true selfless act always sparks another.
There we go. Bye, everyone. See you soon.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Silver Screen Podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Produced and edited by Mike Wilson. Additional material and behind-the-scenes sections by DK. Follow us on social media. Links to all of our social media pages can be found via the Linktree page listed in the episode's description. This podcast is part of the Mike's Podcast Network. You can listen to this and our sister podcasts on all good podcast providers by searching for Silver Screen Podcast or Mike's Podcasts. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and share far and wide. Thank you for joining us. Come back next time for more movie magic, and hopefully this can be the beginning of a beautiful friendship. Cut!